Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'ma tell you what you need to know. I'ma tell you what you need to know.
All right, let's start you off with the fact that you need to know Easton Roofing. Integrity matters with Easton Roofing. I know Easton Roofing has been up and repaired my roof. Didn't try to tell me I needed some big, new, brand new roof. No, turned out just a small repair. See, there are options at Easton Roofing. Their client education is second to none. They make sure you know every option that's available. It might be that a re-roof is what you need, but they research every possible solution to your roof. Sometimes you don't, so at least you can put it off for a couple of years, which a lot of us experiencing difficult times right now. That can be a big boost if you can just get by with a repair for right now. Call Easton Roofing at 913-257-5426, residential and the biggest commercial jobs. Yes, project manager on site, happy to do repairs. Never, never collecting payment until you're 100% satisfied, and they do accept credit cards, and financing is available as well. Working in the entire metro, including Lawrence and Topeka, let Easton Roofing get you back to life. Let Easton Roofing get you back to business faster. Easton Roofing, integrity matters. Call 913-257-5426. See them online at eastonroofing.com. All right, let's get you started with a little bit of college basketball news. As turns out, a couple of programs already going on the shelf. Tennessee, number 12 team in the country, is pausing their activities. Rick Barnes, head coach at Tennessee, has tested positive. The Duke opener against Gardner-Webb has been postponed. Ole Miss has canceled its first four games and will pause until December 7th. That's a lot. That is a lot that's going on. College basketball trying to get up and get running, but it has been a challenge, to say the very least. Bill Self on a Zoom today talked a lot about what's going on and trying to get everything going. He says his team has a lot of unknowns, though, as they head into playing a team as good as Gonzaga.
I would say not very prepared because of the unknown. You know, if we'd have been able to do a couple of dress rehearsals, I would say that we had a better chance to be prepared. And I'm sure Mark's saying the same thing with his group, saying, yeah, I think we're ready. Yeah, I think we are. But you know, you don't know exactly how you'll handle certain things because it's hard to prep for it with no rehearsal. But, you know, we've opened up against Kentucky or Duke or Michigan State to start a season multiple times now in the first game. And, you know, I'm not saying we're always successful, but our guys usually rise to that occasion, and certainly anticipate them doing that as well this year.
And then from that perspective, how much of a luxury is it for you to have a guy like Marcus, who obviously is very familiar with you? You're very familiar with him, and he's been, you know, playing a big role for a while.
Yeah, I think it's a great luxury to have experience, especially when, you know, you don't know what to expect. You know, after you get a couple of games under your belt, the experience is still so important, but it's more important in the game situations than it is the prep situations. And so, yeah, it's great to have Mark and Mitch and David and Oach, some experience out there. But also the team we're playing against also has, you know, that same experience. So I'm not sure it's a bonus for us as much as it is, it neutralizes things.
1 versus 6 in the AP poll, 2 versus 5. That's what Gonzaga and Kansas are ranked. Gonzaga the 1 and 2 team, depending upon the poll. Kansas 6 in the AP, 5 in the coaches poll. I don't think Kansas is going to pee down its leg when it sees Gonzaga, right? I mean, he said it. They're usually going up against Duke, Michigan State, or Kentucky, which is always, you know, what, at worst, like 18, 19 in the country. But generally speaking, you're facing a top 10, top 5 opponent. Kansas will be in pretty good shape. Listen, whatever Bill Self has had to deal with, whatever struggles he's had to deal with, so has every other program out there. And does Gonzaga routinely tip off with one of their biggest games? I know they always feature in tournaments, and they'll have some marquee non-con games. I'm legitimately asking, do they come right out of the chutes big, or do they try to get a couple of scrimmages under their belt before they get going?
My recollection is that they don't really come out and play anybody big, like, right out, because they're not one of the perennial, like, powerhouses when you think Michigan State and Kentucky and things of that nature. So it seems like they have a couple of times to get their feet wet.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think this is a big test for Gonzaga as well. Like, this is they're going in as one of the heavies, and they've done that before, but not usually. They're highly ranked, but usually not like one of the top couple of teams in the country. So they'll play with a little pressure, and they'll do it against a veteran Kansas team. And you heard Marcus Garrett, ranked the number two player returning in the country because of his defensive prowess by Gasson at ESPN, and he wrote a nice piece of the top 25 players. And number two, we talked about this last week, was Marcus Garrett. I mean, that's a pretty good place to start. McCormick's now got a couple of years of experience as he steps into the big man's role, but he's not a guy that's like his first game is going to be going in against Gonzaga. A lot of pieces still to like for that Kansas team, still experience. Bill Self always does a great job. And, of course, they've got a one-and-done-ish. We'll see if he ends up being a one-and-done caliber player in Thompson. But, he always seems to have an elite talent and also experience. And there's plenty of experience on this club, and we'll see if it serves them well on Thanksgiving afternoon when they take on Gonzaga. A little college football for you. Chris Klieman talking today. One of the big subjects that's starting to become a big deal, I know, in talking in football circles, the COVID battle is one thing, but also transfers. And, there's starting to be a lot of transfers at Kansas State. Chris Klieman talking about the transfer portal says it's only going to get more wild.
I'm going to work with the guys that are here, that want to be here, that are doing things that those same guys that are here helped us beat Oklahoma. Those same guys that are here helped us beat TCU. And so, this is going to get across the country once this thing opens up in January, and everybody knows it, that people are going to, if they're not immediately starting, going to potentially look at another place. And that's what we've created by allowing a one-time transfer. And I'm not I'm not against it, I think some kids are trying to think it's going to get if I can get into the portal now, I'm going to get a scholarship. And unfortunately, there's 650 guys in that portal, and you do the math. There's not that many Division I schools.
Interesting there. I've had some people say that the most underreported story in the Kansas City sports scene is the quantity of kids transferring at K-State. That a big scholarship or contract was given, a big extension was given to Chris Klieman, when maybe the road's bumpier than it appears off that first 8-win season. Something to think about. They're all going to have to deal with it, I'm going to tell you, and they always look at it. I think it goes, it's our nature. Anyone who's played fantasy sports, whenever you go to make a trade, you're so terrified to give somebody up or even make a pickup, right? Oh, God, who am I going to cut? And you agonize and you agonize and you agonize. And then you get to the next year's draft and you're like, I had four guys that were crap. But, like, just maybe Zeke Elliott's going to go down, and having Pollard as the backup running back is going to be absolutely vital. So you carry him all year. I'm not saying I've done that in two leagues, but I have, and let some pretty good options go by, right? You'd rather just stick with what you got, and so you can't even fathom living without what you have. And a lot of times I think it's one of the things that really the math has helped the Oakland A's and helped the Tampa Bay Rays. If you just live by the math, who's better, and you go by it, it's easier. Same thing in this transfer portal. Yes, you think it's horrible that all these guys are leaving, and I get investing the time and energy to get kids to understand your system. College is a little bit different than professional, but still, there's 650 guys out there for you to choose from. That's the flip side, coaches. You get to go out and re-recruit and go after some of those guys and say, I've got playing time. We're a good school. We're in it for the Big 12 championship. You got a chance to go recruit that. So, listen, he said he's not against it, but I do think it's something that all these coaches are going to have to realize. Yes, you can sit around and lament the guys you lose, but there's opportunities with guys that you can go get. And that's where it's going. We'd all love to think that you're going to have a kid and he's going to be on your campus for 5 years sitting through a red shirt and everything. It's not the world you live in, but it's the one that you got to thrive in. Les Miles talking today said he hopes KU will be able to play with its COVID numbers that it's got, as they're apparently right up against it. I hope they'll have enough to play against TCU.
We're looking forward to play, but the decision will be made by the health professionals, the Kansas health team, and they do a great job, and we're fortunate to have a group that looks after us.
And how close was it last week? And how, I guess how disappointing was it that you guys didn't get a chance to go out and compete?
Well, it was absolutely not what any of us wanted, but they put themselves in a position. They help professionals to study this on a weekly basis, and there's no dissension here, I can tell you.
Well, I mean, you don't have a choice, right? Like, I don't. The question wasn't, do you dissent? The question was, how close? Right? Kind of an intriguing answer there, or am I the only one that takes it that way?
You know my thoughts on Les Miles, so I'll just keep my mouth shut.
What, that he's a different cat?
Sure, yeah, that's a much kinder way to phrase it.
Okay. All right, I'll take your word for it. Okay, let's move on. Yeah, I hope they play, right? They need to play. They need reps. If they're playing all these young guys, which is what they state, then they got to get them on the field and get them going. We certainly hope everybody plays. I mean, it goes without saying that you hope they play, but I don't know. It's always kind of difficult. I wanted to play a Les Miles one, you know. I wanted to get something in there. Matt Campbell talking about the game against Texas. Many people think that the winner of Texas and Iowa State will be playing Oklahoma for the championship. Oklahoma's got to go to West Virginia and home for Baylor. That's what they have left. Iowa State after Texas has West Virginia at home. Texas after Iowa State has at K-State and at KU, so it very well could be that that is the case. I know Oklahoma State fans say we'll have something to say about that, and certainly other business will have to be handled. Campbell says the Clones will have to bring it again if they want to beat Texas on Friday.
The thing that stands out right away is, you know, just elite bodies and elite football players. You know, I really feel like at every position group right now, you know, you look at the defensive line and, you know, you've got juniors and seniors and you've got just elite size across the board. And then you look at the linebacker crew and you see elite length. And then you see the veteranness and skill in the secondary. You know, you go to the offensive line and, you know, again, elite size. You know, I think the respect that I've got for Sam Ellinger is great of respect as I've got for any quarterback in the country. And, you know, and now you see the youth and the size and speed at tailback. That's really impressive. And then, you know, great wide receiver. So I think that you're just really wowed by what you see in terms of size and ability across the board on this Texas team.
Then does the coach suck? Because if you're wowed by ability and size, yet they're not wowing with their record, not that Texas is bad, then is you're not wowed by what you see on tape as far as what they scheme? Because something doesn't add up. If it's wow, wow, wow with all the guys, already having lost twice in an abbreviated season is not wow, wow, wow. Who's got more at stake here, Matt Campbell or Tom Herman?
Tom Herman.
He's got more at stake in the sense that he's got more to lose, but Iowa State, I think Matt Campbell may have way more to gain. I don't think, you know, Tom Herman's already at one of those elite destination jobs. Matt Campbell wins this game, gets himself into the Big 12 championship game. One, that's a big step, and that puts him back on, I think, the short list for any big jobs that might open. Beat OU, win the league, and I think Matt Campbell, you know, is going to get another raise at Iowa State for sure. And I think it does set him up. I think he's got a lot to gain, right? Maybe more to lose, Tom Herman, more to gain, Matt Campbell. All Tom Herman does is stay one step in front of the posse, to be honest with you, if you look at it.
And I understand your point, though. What's the biggest job, though, that we heard Matt Campbell associated with when he was having success prior to this? It was Ohio State, and, I mean, you know I'm no Ohio State fan by any means, but I don't think you're looking at getting rid of Ryan Day and being like, oh, get
no,
Matt
but
Campbell.
I think if USC implodes, which right now they've won a couple of games and they're in the top 25, but they were more impressive against Utah than they were in the opener. I don't even remember who they have to rally against. ASU, Herm Edwards' club. They needed an onside kick to come back and beat Arizona State in the first one. USC could be open.
Yeah, that's fair. And Florida State will probably be open. I'm always a little
Mike Norvell just got there.
Oh, that's right. I'm just thinking about how bad they've been so far this season. But they had a lot of ways to go. But I'm always a little bit leery of like a USC just because of the fit.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, and I think it is a totally different sitting in the middle of Los Angeles. It is a different culture that's there. But, there's always – listen, at some point Nebraska may be open. I mean, I don't think it's this year. I think they're going to go at least one more year. But Nebraska is a job. Is that an elite job anymore? I don't know. I mean, is it just an elite paycheck that may be out there for the guys? South Carolina throws, buku bucks at the guy, the amount of money that Iowa State says, no, we're not matching that. I think there's always, possibilities. And maybe it's not this year. Maybe it's just win the league this year and then have another really good season next year, and it's a job that opens the following year. Maybe it's Tom Herman at Texas. Maybe Matt Campbell's replacing Tom Herman next year. A couple other nuggets to throw your way. The White Sox and Yankees have rescheduled their Field of Dreams game in Iowa. Going to be August 12th. Of course, got canceled because of the pandemic, and that's tenuous based upon if the pandemic has been brought under control with the vaccines, then they'll play August 12th in that one. NFL news, a lot of COVID news. Adam Thielen on the COVID-19 reserve list. The Ravens, Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins have tested positive for COVID, and they're going to be placed on the list. Cincinnati Bengals, COVID one. Myles Garrett is going to be out again. They've already ruled him out of Sunday's game at Jacksonville as he remains on that list. And then a couple of injuries, old school, real injuries. Joe Burrow injured multiple ligaments in his left knee. An MRI showed he tore ACL and MCL plus other structural damage. So he is done. That was expected. But now official, and Jags DN Josh Allen is going to be out significant time, maybe the year, as he suffered a knee injury on Sunday as well. I think the Jags will probably put him on ice, right? What's the point? They're trying to tank for Trevor Lawrence anyway. That's their whole goal. NBA news, Markieff Morris, a couple of local guys will give you, going back to the Lakers. No terms of the deal announced, but he will be back with the Lakers. And Xavier Sneed, formerly of K-State, has reached an agreement with the Charlotte Hornets, so he will try to make their roster. We will take a break. We'll come back, talk to the quarterback. We go from the shotgun with Trent Green next here on the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
I used to do subversive radio myself in the 70s, okay? But for this gig, we need a little more positivity, all right?
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. He did something no quarterback will ever do again. Get drafted in the 8th round. He's a 2-time Pro Bowler and has as many rushing touchdowns as Joe Delaney. Look it up, it's true. It's time to go from the gun with Trent Green on the program.
You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you as we finish strong, as we always do, with Trent Green with us here in the 5 o'clock hour. Trent, welcome to the T-Mobile guest line. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Yeah, I got back from my game and had a chance to watch the Chiefs and the Raiders last night. So that was as exciting as everybody across the country thought it was going to be, and a lot of fun.
All right, so if you pulled that off, and you were what, in Denver, right?
Yes.
So how much are you hightailing it from the stadium to the airport to catch a flight and be back here in time to see the game?
Well, I didn't get back till today. So there were, because of all these, the airlines have adjusted their flight schedules quite a bit. So there was no way for me to get home last night. So there was no hightailing. I basically just took the car back to the hotel and hunkered down in the hotel, got some food, and watched the game.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's awesome. That's good. Good for you.
I would rather get home and watch the game on tape, but. With all the flight changes and everything else, it was that's what you got to do.
Yeah, you do what you have to do. I hear you. So tell me, when you look at the game, I felt like the Chiefs handled business is how I would describe what they did. They got done what they needed to get done, but actually the Raiders gained more from that game. They validated the first score, right? They validated that it wasn't just a fluke win by taking the Chiefs all the way to the wire again. And maybe even the Chiefs backed up a little bit, because this is now back-to-back games where their defense has allowed 30-plus points. Again, not a negative getting a win in the NFL ever, but just from, like, our perspective of what these two teams are, the Raiders gained more in my eyes, and the Chiefs maybe lost a little bit. What was your view?
Well, getting the chance to talk to John Gruden, I don't think he would look at it the same way. the fact is they're right in the thick of the playoff hunt. They're trying to get in. So, they wanted to get the win bad. And as far as like which one gained more from it, I don't know. You know, I've had so many different conversations with coaches and players over the years where, you know, it's so hard to win in the league. You know, we went into this game, you know, my game was the Miami at Denver game. So we go into it thinking, okay, Miami's won 5 in a row. Denver is just completely backpedaling, not sure what's going on there. So we thought, and just like everyone else, we thought Miami was going to go in there. They're going to play great defense, run the football, no matter who was going to be the running back. Tua was going to be efficient, you know, those kinds of things. It started off that way. And then sure enough, Denver gets it going and puts together, you know, over 400 yards of offense, or right around 400 yards of offense. Drew Lock after his early interception. So you can't take anyone for granted. And even though we had that same exact conversation with Brian Flores and Tua Tagovailoa and Emmanuel Ogbah and, you know, the other guys that we talked to, they were all saying, listen, we don't care what Denver's done. We have to take them. This is the NFL, and every week you got to be ready. And so I think that's what the Chiefs, knowing that the history of this rivalry and the way it's gone down, I know there's some, I guess, from the way you asked the question, based on the fact that Vegas scored as much as they did, but the fact is the Chiefs still outgained them, you know, by 100 yards. And they were able to put up some big numbers and you'd like to see the defense play better, but, you know, the Raiders have I told you the guys this over the last few weeks, because I've had the Raiders a few times now. They've got a ton of talent over there. Derek Carr is playing as well as he's played in his career. Josh Jacobs is – I thought the Chiefs did a really good job holding him to, you know, 3 yards a carry. You know, he's one of the best backs, and I think one of the best up-and-coming backs in the league. And then, you know, you combo Nelson Agholor and Darren Waller and Hunter Renfrow, and Ruggs has yet to get going, but he's got the speed that can all of a sudden make a big play. They've got a lot of talent on that side. So, don't – anytime you get a win, it's a good thing. But when you look at the talent that the Raiders have been able to assemble and the job that the Chiefs did, I think it was impressive.
Yeah, and listen, I agree, and that's why I say the Chiefs got done what they needed to get done, which was the win. But are we starting to see that their defense has cracks? Are we starting to see that – there have been a lot of great signs. The second half of last year, the defense did a fantastic job early on. They weren't allowing any more than 20 points to anybody. Then the Raiders got them for 40. They seem to get back to business for 3 games. Then they give up 31 to a Panther team. We are like, well, they had the bye week on the other side, so maybe they just kind of sleptwalked through it. This is the game that everybody pointed to. They talked about the victory lap. They seem to have all this additional motivation, and they go out there, and what happens? The story of the game is Patrick Mahomes picked the whole team up and carried them, and the defense got carried. So is that a sign? I guess my point is, is this team starting to look more like the 2018 Chiefs than the second half 2019 Chiefs?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I'm ready to go that far. I still think the defense is, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm trying to scroll through the different points that they've given up, right? So it's 20, 20, 20, 10, and then 40 to the Raiders, then 17, 16, 9, 31 to the Panthers, 31 to the Raiders. So, I mean, there have been a few games in there. Yeah, you know, I know there's going to be a lot of attention placed on tonight's game with the Rams and Buccaneers, with Tampa Bay coming, or the Chiefs going to Tampa Bay next week. So that's going to be a huge challenge, because Tampa Bay is loaded with offensive weapons. I just rattled off all the Raiders' weapons on offense, but Tampa Bay's got probably even more weapons. So, I guess I look at what transpired a year ago, and I know Steve Spagnuolo was just in his first year, and there were some growing pains trying to figure out, you know, there's some injuries in the middle of the season with some guys on defense and just trying to figure it all out, and then they got on their run. And I don't know. I just I just think they've got a lot of pieces on that side that are really good. And if they can get everybody healthy and everybody dialed in and have some continuity, and I know this is, of all seasons, 2020 is not the season of continuity or rhythm or normal anything. You know, if they can get that going defensively, you know, so much is made about communication and reps and what teams do offensively. And the defensive coordinators and coaches that I've talked to over the years and the players I've talked to over the years as a broadcaster, I guess I never really realized how much of that goes or takes place on the defensive side. You know, I thought it was more, hey, you're in cover two, you're playing this, and this is what your drop is. And I didn't realize that how much goes into, you know, gap discipline and guys having to have each other's backs and everything else. And I should have, being on the offensive side and studying, I just knew where all the windows were and where I wanted to attack.
Right.
And just the fact that, you know, I just anticipated getting better and you know, it's hard to dethrone the champion. So I don't look at anything negative from last night's game.
Okay, so and I'd be happy to watch. You know, I'm hoping that I watch the defense blank the Bucs and you know shut down the Saints and the Dolphins and everything that's looming out there for them. And if they did, what you know, I could come back and just say, okay, you know, hey, styles make fights in boxing. Right? A guy who's got 10 losses can just be the worst matchup for a guy who's never lost a fight, and it's just going to be difficult because of the styles. Is the fact that the Raiders have the best offensive line, is that kind of the kryptonite maybe for the Chiefs? Is that, it's as simple as that, that, you know, they're the one team and they've got a quarterback that's playing pretty damn good behind that offensive line, and so the one thing that can really cause problems for Steve Spagnuolo's group is when he can't get pressure?
Well, and the Raiders have invested so much in that offensive line. First off, you know, we know Rodney Hudson. He was drafted here, and mm-hmm. I think he's the best center in the league. And the fact that he's been all pro, you know, kind of backs that up. But then you look at Gabe Jackson, who's finally healthy after a couple years of injuries. Denzel Good's playing very good at the other guard position. Trent Brown has been in and out of the lineup just because of different things. But when he's in there, I mean, they've invested in that offensive line for a reason. So, yeah, I mean, it's – I believe it's the highest paid from a cap standpoint of any offensive line in the league. So, yeah, that is, they've been able to do a good job against a lot of teams. And even though the Chiefs have invested money in Chris Jones and Frank Clark, you know, that's a lot of bodies to try and push the pile.
Well, and Colt Miller is a former first round draft pick,
yes,
and against
he is. That's
the
right.
You know against Frank Clark, he looked like, you know, it was Jonathan Ogden out there or something, the way he was winning. And
well,
that's
what the Raiders are hoping. But, you know, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they've got, like you said, they're invested in what they're doing on that side of the – on that part of the line of scrimmage. You know, so then are the Raiders, like you said, they're in the mix. They're one of three teams at 6-4 tied for that last spot along with the Dolphins and the Ravens. Do you think that they're ready to maybe run the table and finish this thing off and be a playoff team? You're going to call them next week at the Falcons. That's a game they should win, right? If they're going to be a playoff team, they should bounce back and go get a win against, you know, to quote your old coach, Dick Vermeil, keep losing teams losing. Well, the Falcons are one of those. Are they a team that you think is ultimately going to make their way into the postseason?
I think they can. I think they definitely have the talent. I know that just having known John Gruden over the years and the kind of the way he approaches things, he's not going to lighten up on them. It's going to be very aggressive in his approach to practice. And obviously with the COVID stuff that they've been dealing with, that, you know, they went last week with the majority of their defense not even getting an opportunity to practice. But he doesn't like the excuse things. And a lot of head coaches don't like the excuse things. So, you know, just looking at their schedule real quick, they got the Falcons, they got the Jets, they got a tough one against the Colts. Of course, the Chargers, we know they can put up a lot of points, even though they're not, from a record standpoint, not doing real well. And then, you know, week 16 against the Dolphins, that could ultimately decide whether they make it to the playoffs or not, because that's two teams that are both hoping to be in playoff contention, you know, week 16. So before they finish up at the Broncos. So it's, you know, I think it's a team. I think it's a team with the way they're playing that is either going to get with the expanded playoffs. I do think they'll be one of the teams to sneak in.
We're talking to Trent Green here in the program. Chris Jones barking at a couple of defensive backs. I thought I saw Charvarius Ward at the receiving end of it. Nate Taylor earlier today thought Legarius Sneed was over there as well. It's an emotional game. I don't think this is any big deal unless we see it continue, right? To me, it's just a note. Let me write this down. And if you see them barking at each other on the field, or Chris Jones barking at other people on the field, then you start to say, okay, now maybe there's a problem. So I'm not, you know, ringing an alarm bell. Is that the right way to look at it, or is it more serious than I think to see a guy barking like that on the sideline at his teammates?
I wouldn't take it too serious. There were a lot of those. I'll label it as discussions over my years on the team, both between players and between players and coaches. It's just now there's a lot more, I guess, you know, there's a lot more attention drawn to it. In the past, it wasn't necessarily caught on camera or caught on phones. I know there were no fans in the stands, and so that makes it a little easier to have those kinds of conversations or discussions, as I labeled it. But I wouldn't look too much into it. My guess is it had something to do with, you know, hey, you need to pressure more because we can't cover all day, and hey, you need to, you know, do your job and I'll do my job, you know, one of those kind of things, in a little bit more selective language than that.
Sure.
But I wouldn't read too much into it.
Okay. All right. Tell
just
me,
and just based on the way that Andy Reid has built this team, and you look at the continuity and the family feel, and you listen to, you know, Tyrann Mathieu, and you listen to Chris Jones in his interviews, and you listen to Frank Clark in their interviews, and, you know, just what they're talking about on the defensive side with Steve Spagnuolo. I wouldn't make too big of an issue of it.
All right. Tell me, what did you think of Patrick Mahomes' final drive? I know as fans, we all felt like at least overtime's coming, right? There was a tremendous sense of confidence amongst all the fans. As a guy who's played the position, you know, been out there, made those drives happen. What do you think about when you're seeing what he did? How surgical he was?
Well, I guess I laugh or chuckle at the quote that Andy Reid, you know, afterwards they're talking to him about time management, and he's like, listen, I got Patrick Mahomes. I wasn't worried about anything. Give me a minute and a half and Patrick Mahomes. And so I was like Andy. I thought the Raiders gave him too much time. I don't know how you would manage it any differently because they were down at the 1 yard line for, you know, several plays. But from a time standpoint, I'm sitting there and I'm like, this is, for a guy like Patrick Mahomes and the weapons he has and the type of game that Tyreek was having and the type of game that Kelsey was having. And, I thought it was too much time, and it ultimately played out that way.
So how much can David Carr slow down scoring? You know, how much can Patrick right. Mahomes yeah. slow down scoring? You know, it's always bothered me that Andy Reid got – ripped for his clock management, and you know me, I'm a Syracuse guy, so I love.
Oh yeah, no, and there's been plenty opportunities in his career where you could get after,
but
whether it's in Philly or here. But I thought the way, yeah, I thought the way he handled this game was excellent.
But I don't hear anybody, you know, saying, "Wow, look at Andy Reid's clock management." And I know it's because it's human nature, because everybody who said it sucked, nobody ever, certainly in this country, wants to admit they're wrong. And so that keeps most people's mouths shut. Let's just move on to new business. Let's go look somewhere else instead right. of going, hey, look at this story I wrote in 2015 after the Chiefs lost to the Patriots, ripping Andy Reid for Alex Smith's final drive where they cut it to 7 and comparing it to the McNabb drive. And like I said, I'm a Syracuse guy and I love me some McNabb. But, like, I watch, it's different. Mahomes takes 25 yards at a time, right? Alex Smith, those are not throws he can make. So he doesn't see that. He checks down, and the guy gets tackled in bounds, and 30 seconds comes off the clock. And then everybody goes, geez, Andy, why'd you call for a check down throw? Like, you know, there are options for the quarterback to go with. And Mahomes takes the big plays. And lots of guys can't do that. And if you don't have one of those guys that takes those big plays, is like, how much of it's coach, how much of it's quarterback?
It's a combination. It's got to be both. And not only is it the play call and the guy executing the play, being the quarterback, the aggressiveness, how you want him to approach it, It's also the adaptability and what you're able to do within the course of a play. So I thought NBC did a good job last night. There was one play with Kelce that he was running a certain route. He looked back for the ball, but he saw Mahomes go one way. So he stopped his route and went back the other way, and the defender got lost when Kelce broke his route off and went the other way. But because he was on the same page with Patrick, that's why it all came together. So you're like, oh, well, that was a great play. That wasn't a great play design. That was just two guys being on the same page, being in sync together, understanding the scramble rules or whatever they've put in place, and executing and getting the job done. So, yes, there's the framework of the play, and there's the normal progression you would do in a normal down and distance, quarter, score, whatever it may be. Then there's the aggressive approach as a quarterback. Hey, they're calling this play, but I know I got a minute and a half to go. There's certain things I got to take. I got to be a little bit more risky with my throw. And then there's the third thing, which is the improv, which is what Patrick does, you know, probably better than anybody else in the NFL. And his guys are on the same page with him, and it's pretty special to see.
I'll let this go. I don't know. I like it as a topic. But, you know, the New England Patriots, they lost by five, and they were, 2 yards away from beating the Seattle Seahawks in Seattle. They lost to the Broncos by 6 points. They lost by a field goal to the Buffalo Bills. They got it down to a touchdown against the Texans. Like, has Bill Belichick just forgot how to manage a game? Right? Or does he not have Tom Brady? That, to me, like, I think you're being modest, Trent. Like, absolutely, you can't have a dingbat play caller, right? You can't have doofus plays. But that, to me, is kind of like saying, well, if you want to be a sprinter, you can't be a fat ass, right? Okay, that's a prerequisite, all right? We know you got to be in shape if you want to be a sprinter. We know you got to be a good play caller if you want to be good at these things. But after that, like, it is you guys with the ball in your hand that ultimately make the success, right? You have to be able to make the throws under duress. You have to hurry the team up. You have to digest the information now twice as fast. And you have to be willing to take the throws down the field, because you can't just – a 14-play drive isn't going to get it done. I mean, I would say it's 75-25 quarterback.
In those situations, it probably is. It probably is, just because there's certain progressions within a play that you've discussed during the week that, hey, take what the defense gives you. This is how we're going to call the play. This is how we want you to run the play. In those types of situations, you have to be more aggressive. And those discussions are made normally during timeouts or whatever it may be. But you know, as a quarterback, when a play comes in, yes, I'm supposed to read, you know, the flat to the curl to the seam. But in that situation, you're going to read the seam to the curl, and if I have to throw the flat, I will. So you have to make some adjustments depending on the amount of time and the aggressiveness that you want to take. So I would agree with that. I would say that in those types of situations, how a quarterback handles it, and those are all discussions you have throughout the course of the season, throughout the course of the offseason, or at least those are discussions you should be having. When it comes down to, you know, understanding the game management of it and how you want to attack certain situations. Because every single coach and quarterback that I have discussions with on a weekly basis, we always talk about situational football, right? It's like, okay, you try and do as much situational type stuff in practice as you can. And there's certain coaches that are better at it than other coaches. Some coaches in the middle of practice, it'll be, hey, we're doing a 1st and 10 drill and here's our play sheet. We got 12 plays. All of a sudden they'll blow the horn. They'll say, listen, it's 3rd and 3 on the 24-yard line with 54 seconds left. And defense, here's your call. You've got 30 seconds to make your call. Offense, you got 30 seconds to make your call. And so some coaches do that. They'll do it right in the middle of practice just to put their coordinators on the spot about, hey, we've got to be able to do it. And quarterbacks need to understand that. And like I said, that's a discussion that goes on. And the aggressiveness of a play call changes depending on, you know, the timeline of the game and what's being, I guess, what the ultimate outcome is you're trying to get, whether it's the final 2 minutes or end of a half or whatever it may be.
Trent Green's with us here in the program, filling our heads with knowledge on the game of football as we speak right now. So here's the next one I want from you. Who screwed up, Robinson or Mahomes on the INT?
I always go with the quarterback. You know that.
You know, I do, and I was going to tell the story again. I won't even name your teammate, not with you on the line. But I remember one time you had a pick, and I saw you on the sidelines, and I saw the discussion. And just whatever knowledge of football I have, I felt pretty confident your receiver had made a mistake. And I asked you at the podium afterwards, and you're like, oh, I screwed up. And I said, well, you kind of had a chat. Yep, I went over and told him, you keep doing what you're doing. I'll get my head right. I mean, you totally fell on the grenade for this guy. Yeah. And I am, to this day, 100% convinced that he screwed up. And so you're always going to say that, but, like, come on. That one, it did. Patrick's, so, that didn't look like he thought that.
Yeah. No. So that's the job as a quarterback, right? You're going to get the good and you're going to get the bad. And I knew, and I don't know what specific one you're talking about, but, that's just part of being the leader of a team. I mean, that's, if you're a head coach, if you're, you know, a quarterback, whatever it may be, that's just what you have to do. So, yes, but I'll defend Patrick every time. I'll defend the quarterback all the time.
Yeah, okay. All right, I like it. We're talking to Trent Green here in the program. Time for our Final Four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you've got an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System has extended weekday hours to see you quickly. Request an appointment at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I'll start with this. Who carves the bird at your house?
It's usually me. Yeah, it's usually
that's
me.
That's awesome. I'm so proud of you. Well, I'm not allowed to get anywhere near it. It would be such a debacle if I did it. That's awesome. How proud are you that IU backed you up and not only covered but scared the hell out of Ohio State?
I could care less about the cover.
You predicted it last week. Give me a prediction on the game. You said they will cover when I told you the spread.
Well, the fact that it was 21 points, I was like – I'm like, I don't know which of you guys, I don't know which of my friends or anybody is, you know, gambling or got the apps or whatever they're doing. And I'm just like, that's insane to think. And then, of course, it was 35-7. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. Let's go. But I'm really proud of Tom Allen and his crew. And if you go through that game, I know exactly what he's done in meetings this week is we had a drop ball on fourth down that would have been a first down, gotten us into field goal range, if not a touchdown. We had a missed opportunity here. We had a missed opportunity here. We dropped here. There were enough opportunities to where they could have won that football game. I'm just proud of the fact that when they got down, they didn't bury their heads and just get completely blown out. They just kept fighting and came back and really made it a game right to the final play. So it's I'm proud of him and what he's been able to do with that program and how he's been able to turn it around.
Yeah, I'm not anti-Ohio State, but in those situations, you got to be for the underdog. So it was fun to watch Indiana. So I was rooting my butt off for them. All right, what's your favorite side
dish? I'm going to be honest. I was hoping for that IU Northwestern Big Ten championship.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
I know. Trust me. Your name was mentioned a few times on the rally, with me and some friends. We were texting like, oh, what do you think Trent's doing? all right, what's your favorite side dish at Thanksgiving?
Oh, man. Potatoes and gravy. I tend to like put gravy on everything. So it's like, cause I don't eat a lot of gravy. And when you get that thick turkey gravy, it's just like, I'm just basically going to cover my whole plate in it. So, So I'll say the side dish would be potatoes and gravy.
I haven't had but a handful of carbs over the last couple of months, and if mashed potatoes aren't coming out my nose on Thanksgiving, then I've done something wrong. I will tell you that right now. All right, is the interception? Last question: is the interception ever the offensive coordinator's fault?
I'll say no, because ultimately the decision is the quarterback. He's got the ball in his hands and he's deciding where it's going, no matter what the coverage is. And there's times where the OC can call a better play. But it's our jobs as quarterbacks to make a play work. And I used to say that every time whether it was Al Saunders or Mike Martz or North Turner, whoever it was, your job is to call the play that you think is the best for the situation. Whatever your percentages and what you've studied and prepared in terms of your game plan and calling, you give us the best chance by the play call. Now, that doesn't mean that's what the defense is going to do. Now, it's my job as a quarterback to execute it and get us into the best possible situation based on, you know, what's going on the field. Because all you're doing as a play caller is playing the odds. You're playing what you've been able to break down in tape during the course of the whole week, what you're anticipating the defense is going to do based on where on the field it is, what time of the game it is, what the score it is. I mean, all this stuff is broke down in terms of percentages. So you're calling plays based on what you think the defense is going to do. Now, it's my job when the ball's in my hand to make it work. And sometimes making it work means on third and nine, you know, throwing a two-yard flat and just say, you know what, the defense had the right call made on that one, and my job was to do it here. It's not my job to try and force it between three defenders. So I'm going to put it on the quarterback on that one.
All right, I'll take it. You're the man.
That was a way longer answer than probably what you were hoping for. But no.
it's always a great answer, though. I don't really care. It could be a great answer with two words or 200. Man, it's on you. I just let you go. You're the star. You're the one who's been out there, man. We're just looking for the insight. You always give us great insight, Trenton. We love it, man. Hey, listen, have yourself a great Thanksgiving. All the best to you and your family. And, you know, stay safe, and we look forward to talking to you again next week.
I appreciate it, Saran. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. Be safe and, yeah, enjoy whatever family time you can get.
That's right. That's right. Trent Green, ladies and gentlemen, from CBS, does a fantastic job. Always love talking football with Trent Green. We'll take a break, wrap things up with the kicker next.
The program with Saran Petro.
Arrogance may not be a uniquely American trait, but I must say you do it better than anyone.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
First, the end of the hour question brought to you by Jazz Louisiana Kitchen. Question. Tom Brady has 18 career wins on Monday Night Football, third most of all time. The two in front of him, Dan Marino and Brett Favre, with 20 and 19, respectively. Saran?
Yeah. Yes. Marino and Favre, that is a little bit shocking. Wouldn't you think that? I mean, I know those guys won a lot of games and they're great quarterbacks, but Brady's been around for freaking ever and played on a team that's been to 9 Super Bowls. I'm surprised that those guys are ahead of him.
I was surprised at Marino just because of the Monday night phenomenon. I didn't remember the Dolphins playing on there all that much.
Yeah, I guess they did. Great Cajun food from Jazz, a Louisiana Kitchen. That's what we were playing for. Go to jazzkitchen.com to check out the whole menu. Grab it and go on your way home. Or, of course, they're adhering to all the protocols so you can sit down and eat inside as well. The kicker today, Mizzou, not going to play Arkansas. Yes, this just coming down. Mizzou, Arkansas has been postponed. So has Tennessee and Vandy. So why not go ahead and play Vandy? That's what they're going to do. Missouri will host Vandy this weekend. That game had been rescheduled from earlier this year back to December 12th. Now it's being bumped up, and it'll be played this weekend. I would, you know, we'd all be freaking out if we didn't have, and I'll go back. I still think it was a guy that I always remember calling a shot. Bob Bowlesby coming out and saying, listen, we're going to have to be ready for a season like no other. We're going to have to be flexible on our schedules. We're going to have to be ready for games to be postponed or canceled or moved. We're going to have to be able to move things around. That's exactly what they're doing. It is really impressive how they've put all these games together. And we're not panicking at this moment because we knew it was coming.